Hello and welcome to Unit 7, Training Techniques. So let's start. My intention is to have three podcasts in this unit that cover kind of the different chunks of training techniques. The first of which will just deal with how we take our outcomes and formulate those into particular training objectives. So that's the goal of this first short podcast. Now you've worked through a needs assessment. You've collected data, you've done a data analysis, you've found particular things in your data analysis. It's now time to take those findings and translate those into outcomes that will be meaningful for an organization. One way to do that is to use a problem analysis decision tree. This asks the following questions. Number one, is the identified problem important? That is, does it warrant the attention of the organization and training to correct it? So you might find, for whatever reason, lots of people mention that there's not enough water available to employees in the break room. The water dispenser runs out too often and isn't replaced often enough. Is that a problem? Yes. Is it an important problem? Yes. People need to be hydrated. Is it something that involves training? No. You don't necessarily need to train people to ask that the water cooler get replaced more often. We need to tell the organizational powers that be that, hey, this came up in the report. People would like to see more water. So that's an important problem in that organization, but it's not one that necessarily warrants training to correct it, right? Which leads us to another question then. Is communication functioning well in this organization? We have established that, yes, there's a problem, and it probably needs to be addressed through training. We didn't give an example of that, but let's go ahead and do it. Let's say you find that the employees in the acquisitions group feel that there's not clear information transfer between them and the publishing group. So these are the people, let's say this isn't a publishing organization, these are the people who get the contracts from writers and do the acquisitions of material. And then all that gets forwarded over to the actual publishing branch, which then publishes the products, let's say textbooks, for example. And those two groups don't feel like there's information. Well, let's say one group feels like they're fine. Publishing group says everything's okay. The acquisitions group says, no, we just don't feel like there's clear connection between us and the publishing group. So you've got now an organizational problem. That clearly is important and probably could use some training to correct it. Is the issue with the publishing group, or is it with the training group, acquisitions group, or some of both? That's something we'll need to discover and tease out. Maybe training needs to happen in both places. So that leads us then to the question two, is communication functioning well? Well, in this case, not necessarily. It seemed to be lateral communication across and between groups. We then might want to ask what barriers or problems exist in terms of the communication. Well, we might find that the publishing group gets very busy with the publishing side of the house and doesn't have time to respond as well as the acquisitions group would like to their requests, to their inquiries, those kinds of things. So what's the barrier? Well, the barrier seems to be the expectations of communication. The publishing group doesn't feel like they need to respond in a timely manner to the acquisitions group, so that might be a barrier. Another barrier could be that the publishing group has too much going on at one time. Maybe there needs to be a different arrangement of how they're processing through the workflow there. Or, on the flip side, the acquisitions group needs to maybe readjust their expectations of how quickly or timely that they would hear back from publishing. So what leads us to question four, are these barriers, problems, are they process related or people related? So far, it sounds to me, the way this example is shaping up, that these would be process related, right? We might find out, though, that they tend to be people related, that the one or two people that are intaking, that are meant to be doing the coordinating between acquisitions and publishing wings of this organization are not coordinating well enough together. So it could, in fact, be maybe people-related. Then again, it could be process-related. Maybe there's some processes in place that are keeping communication from happening effectively. Now, when we think through those things, we say, okay, if it's process-related, then training should be about information transfer, the communication piece of it needs to focus on is information getting from where it starts to where it needs to go. Is that happening in a timely fashion? Is it going through without a lot of distortion? Those are the kinds of questions, those are the kinds of things we want to think about when we're building training to deal with a process issue. On the other hand, if it's people related, then we're probably designing training around something that deals with a human relations issue or how people interact with one another. Maybe we need to do some team building so that publishing and acquisitions feel more like a team rather than separate entities, for example. Maybe we need to do some activities based around trust. Maybe there's some mistrust or distrust issues. We could go on and on. There are any number of ways that it could go. But we're going to assume then that we're training about some of these interaction styles and what are the issues that are keeping these groups at a relational level or an interpersonal level from interacting more effectively. Now, that's not to say we're creating a false dichotomy here, saying it's one or the other. It very well could be some of both, and we need to design a multi-layered training that is part process related and part people related. And certainly there are activities that would be able to speak to both of those issues. Okay, so the trainer must attempt to identify the goals of the training, and it's best to try to do this in consultation with the organization or the partner or team that you'd be working with. What do they hope to get out of the training, right? What specific goals can we set? The trainer then sets measurable objectives that reflect the desired goals. Now, you might be saying, well, wait, didn't we already do measurement? Didn't we already collect data? We did. But we're going to be collecting data yet again because we want to, A, have done a needs assessment, which tells us what kind of training should happen. But then on the back end of the training, we also need to collect data to do one of two things, or both, to say that, in fact, we achieved the goals, right, and to demonstrate whether or not the training was effective. So we're going to do something that has to do with evaluation of the training, which is the final unit here that we'll come to in a few days. The training consultant, though, for now, understand, deals with taking the goals and turning them into measurable objectives. So you might say a goal would be to increase communication effectiveness between the two groups. Now that's a goal, but how are you going to demonstrate that that happened? You could demonstrate that through measurable outcomes like people's perceptions. That would be a simple way to do it. People perceive now, after being trained in X, Y, and Z, that in fact the two groups communicate better with one another. That would work. We could have some other measurable objectives. We could have increases in, let's say, productivity, or increases in coordination, or increases in, let's say, decreases in time of getting acquisitions into publishing, particular pieces rather, through the acquisition process and into the publishing stage. Those kinds of things could be indicators that, in fact, the groups are better coordinated, more coordinated than they had been. Those are all measurable objectives that come out of the goal that we said, having the groups better coordinated. So it's understandable to understand that we need to take the measurable objectives for each of the goals and figure out a way that we're going to be able to demonstrate that, in fact, that goal has been achieved. All right, so before beginning any training then, you can see those bullet points here. You've got to identify the problem. You then have to set a goal for addressing that problem. But it's not enough just to set a goal. You need to then come up with measurable objectives that will help demonstrate that the goal has or hasn't been met. So those three steps need to happen before you start an actual training. You are getting the cart, before the horse if you're engaged in training and you haven't yet set the goals, or you haven't set the ways in which you'll measure those goals. All that would need to happen before you actually start your training in the organization. So to get you better acquainted with this process, to get you thinking through how you would do it, I want you now to go to the training preparation steps exercise. That gives you an opportunity to kind of work through a couple of these scenarios on your own, to think about, given this situation that is revealed from your analysis, from your needs assessment, what would you do next? So go ahead and pause the podcast and And we'll return to that after you have completed the training preparation steps exercise. Welcome back. The training techniques that you would use then are training techniques chosen are always done so within the constraints that you're dealing with as the training and development consultant. So it's important to understand that you're working within constraints, and this is a theme that we've come back to many times. So you may want to shoot for the moon and say, here are the goals I've developed, and here are the objectives that come out of the training, and here are the outcomes, and here's how we want to reach those, here are the measurable outcomes I've set up. But all of that needs to be couched within the possibilities of what will be available to you in terms of the person doing the training and development. So you need to consider particular factors, and those factors obviously begin with simple things like the time. How much time will be available to you as a trainer? Now, within, if you're an in-house person working in training development, you probably will have more time available to you than if you're someone coming in from the outside. Then again, if you work in a company that sees training as important, but yet still kind of routine, you maybe would have less time because you're meant to train across numerous things. If you're the consultant coming in from outside, maybe you're afforded a larger chunk of time. Maybe you're given an entire day or a series of days to do the training. Regardless, it's important to understand that you're going to have time constraints, and you need to retrofit, if you will, the training into the time allowed. What's it going to cost? That's another important consideration. How much will it cost the organization? Not only in terms of the time employees take away from their work, because that's a cost, but what kinds of resources do they need to put into doing the training effectively? Do they need to feed people? Will it be long enough they need to feed? Probably need to feed people and provide some beverages. Do they need to buy any resources in addition to what they already have available to complete the training? Those are things that would be part of the cost of implementation. Another question there regarding constraints is the facilities available. What kind of facilities will be available to do and conduct the training? There might be some restraints that come about because of the facilities. Is the space ample? Do you have to constrain what you're going to try to do in terms of kinesthetic learning, actual hands-on activities you might have people do because you're in a small space versus a bigger space, or you don't have the liberty of having people spread out? Again, could be a constraint. And that leads into then finally their equipment and materials available. There may be limited equipment. You might have the highest technology kinds of things available, the cutting edge stuff. You may not. Should be considerations that are built into how you're actually going to conduct the training and development intervention. Now, let me, before we move to types of training techniques, talk a little bit about differentiating training techniques from training activities. When we talk about training techniques, these are techniques or overarching bigger ideas of which activities fit into. You can have activities that people do, but they might be part of a certain technique. So, for example, you have a particular activity that is, in fact, a role-playing activity. Role-playing is the technique. The specific activity is a type of role-play. What we're doing here in this unit is not going necessarily into great detail on training activities. You'll see plenty of that in Unit 8. In fact, there's lots of different resources that will introduce you to loads of different training activities. In the next section, the next podcast section of this unit, we will be looking very specifically at the training techniques, not the actual activities. So we'll move then to the second section of the podcast for Unit 7, training techniques.